Today's program has been brought to you by the Brooklyn Slate Company, a manufacturer of slate cheese boards, coasters, and other fine items. For more information, visit www.brooklynslate.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listeners, welcome to Feeding the Future, Heritage Radio's program dedicated to the health and well-being of the next generation. I'm your host, Oriane Cosentino. Thank you for tuning in. Today, our guest will be Stefania Patanella, the Director of Food and Nutrition Programs at the Children's Aid Society, one of New York's top-rated children's and family charities, which has served New York City for the past 150 years. And you thought you saw the rents go up. Before we bring on our guest, I'd like to talk a little bit about what we can do in our home kitchens to stay fit and energetic throughout the summer when schedules change and our good habits and eating routines might slack just a little bit. So I was brainstorming this week about healthy snacks. Snacking is a fact. It's a part of our day. It's a part of our culture, to say the least. And it's really important to be aware of what we're choosing and when, so that crappy snacks don't undermine the good habits we've created. Instead, the key is to have, and to teach, a healthy approach to unhealthy food and create an attitude of balance. And this kind of attitude can last a lifetime, instead of just a summer or a semester. So what I propose is a thought process, one where we recognize eating or snacking, eating outside of meals, actually, in levels. So your snacking is going to now have three levels. The levels are daily snacking, indulgent snacking, and VSO, very special occasions, just like needs initials, like all important things, like the LX or the S. So VSO, very special occasions. There's no reason why we shouldn't reward ourselves and our kids once in a while for eating great. But what better way to do that than to continue to eat mostly great and really enjoy the times of splurging instead of doing the thing that we might be known for doing, which is turning off the brain and just shoveling in junk. We've all been there. That means no mindless eating in front of the TV or the computer, but instead giving food your full attention and truly enjoying what's in front of you. And what that means is you're also enjoying all of the food you take in, meals, snacks, all of it. And this becomes a building block to a truly balanced approach. So here we go. Daily snacking. It can be so many great things. The kinds of things you hear about over and over, and the kinds of things we ultimately want to be habit forming. Hummus and fresh veggies, homemade trail mix and granola bars, fresh fruits and fruit salads, apples and nut butters or seed butters for the no nut set. Hard-boiled eggs, baked chips, fresh salsa, things that are substantial and pack a nutritional punch. And if this is what you regularly come to consider as a snack, the habit will form for you, for your family. If you go out, you can always pack these things with you. Or remember, delis always seem to have, especially these days, a yogurt cup, some fresh fruit, even a small bag of pretzels and a piece of cheese. It's probably better. Was definitely better, more filling, and most likely comparable in price to some terribly jacked up bag of chips or some terrible snack that won't ever satisfy a hunger or give any sustainable energy to the eater. So the idea is that daily snacks are whole and fresh and adding extra value to your otherwise good diet. The second level of snacking after daily would be considered indulgent snacking, more of a once or twice per week kind of thing. Some high quality chocolate, a few cookies, a simple piece of cake, a shared dessert. Foods that you can appreciate and enjoy without guilt. Things that don't need to be denied completely, rather well-timed and available, because too much strictness will backfire. The goal of creating a good attitude toward indulging is to avoid overdoing it, but on one's own accord, not because of an elaborate set of rules. There will be more on that in the talk about the least frequent level of snacking, which we're going to call the VSO, very special occasion. It's an event or a party, a gathering where the food has nothing to do with health. It's really just about partying, and that's okay. It seems counterintuitive, but in the long run, it is a better choice to let the very special occasions be a little extra indulgent. Why? First off, no one should be left out of the celebration. It's beneficial to eat with people, to share a meal, to break bread. Rules and restrictions can be lax at this time, just to take the pressure off and to encourage enjoyment. This is a rare occurrence, after all, to eat this way. As I said, rigidity can lead to rebellion. If you tell someone they can't do something or they are limited in doing something, example, you can only have one cupcake, it becomes a challenge for them to get another cupcake, to break the rule, and to be sneaky. But if the approach is a little more open, while maintaining focus on enjoyment and balance, eating a few cupcakes does not become a VBD, a very big deal. That was silly. And this is how steps are taken toward building that good relationship with the indulgent foods and learning to moderate oneself instead of attaching feelings, limitation, judgment, or worse, secrecy. When eating this stuff that's supposed to be just fun and celebratory, and that's it, in a particular setting. In this way, the parameters of the way a family eats, which, you know, mostly wholesome on a regular basis, can also include a little bit of everything. The balance can be learned and shared, and it becomes understood that even the foods that are not ideal to eat on the regular do not have to be banned, and they too can hold a place in the greater ritual of eating. And that's really important to set that goal for you and for your family for a lifetime of healthy attitude towards eating a little bit of everything. To accompany this segment, I'm going to post a recipe, as usual, on the show page at heritageradionetwork.org. So it's Feeding the Future's show page. It may seem like it belongs on the indulgent list, but it is designed to be that way. It's just a wholesome mix of yogurt and fruit, blended and frozen and blended, and it can be enjoyed all the time. It's perfect for summer. It's a frozen treat courtesy of the Children's Aid Society and provided by today's guest, who I'm happy to finally introduce, Stefania Patinella, the Director of Food and Nutrition Programs for the Children's Aid Society. Thank you for being with us on Feeding the Future.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
And thank you for this great recipe. I tried it.
You're welcome. Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did. It's awesome. I did peaches, cherries, and blueberries with the yogurt, and it's absolutely delicious. So we're going to just take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Stefania Patinella and me, your host, Oriane Costantino, on Feeding the Future, heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to TaxStar on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more Feeding the Future.
Brooklyn Slate Company is a collaborative effort from Brooklyn graphic designer Sean Tice and Parsons graduate student Christy Hedeka. After visiting Christy's family slate quarry in upstate New York in the spring of 2009, the two grabbed a few pieces for use as all-purpose boards back home in Brooklyn. They found a number of purposes for the slate and began gifting pieces to friends. The response was so overwhelmingly positive that the two struck out to produce a line of slate products. They now make regular trips to the family quarry in upstate New York to hand-pick their favorite pieces of black and red slate. Some of the slate is sourced from the quarry graveyard, a collection of odd-shaped pieces that were ultimately destined to be ground for use as road cover or baseball diamonds. They then transport the pieces to their studio in Red Hook, Brooklyn, where they do additional cutting and clean the stone to be food slate. Every single piece of packaging that comes with their products, from the envelope to the burlap bag, can be repurposed for other uses. The end result is a product completely unique in cut, shape, color, and overall presentation. For more information and to order, visit brooklynslate.com.
And we're back, ready to speak with Stefania Patanella, the Director of Food and Nutrition Programs for the Children's AIDS Society. Welcome, Stefania.
Thank you.
Excuse me. In your position at the Children's AIDS Society, I know you have initiated programs for age groups from toddler to high school.
Yep.
So that's a really wide range.
Actually, I would say pre-toddler to after high school, so even up to 24.
That's an even wider range, yes. and which is incredible because you're really setting them up for the future, which I know is the major goal of the society in general.
Yeah.
Can you describe a little bit of the journey and the stages that the children go through when they are in the program of the Children's AIDS Society for those years?
Sure. First, I should say, yeah, the goal of Children's AIDS is just to get kids, particularly kids who are in poverty, to college and through college and succeeding in life. And so why food and how does food play in this? Well, obviously they have to be healthy in order to succeed in life, and food is a big part of health. So just that's the sort of foundation of it. You know, health starts from day one. It starts before day one, or depending on where you count day one, right? It starts as soon as a mother is eating foods and sort of nourishing the fetus, right? And so we work with an early Head Start program, which works with women who are pregnant. And then, you know, then they have the babies, they're in our program. For the first 2 years, they're in early Head Start. They move on to Head Start, and that's 2 to 5. Then they move on to elementary school and middle school and high school. And so we follow them throughout this journey. So what's the food journey like in a kid's life, right? I mean, you have to think about food means so much, and you see food in so many different places in a kid's life. And sometimes, like you said, it's about indulgence. And sometimes, more often than that, it's just kind of about, like, you got to eat 3 meals a day. The kid's hungry, going to be cranky if it's not, you know, if it's not eating. So when we start in our toddler years with our education-based program, that's Go Kids. And the main goal of that program is just to get kids to know that their bodies are really important, and that they can take care of them. They have the power to take care of them, and they should take care of them. And so we do these adorable, like, body tracing activities so they can see themselves on paper, and they can see from the beginning to the end of the year how they've grown and be really proud of it. And then we talk about foods in these really, really simple ways. It kind of, like, reminds me of your little very special occasions.
VSO.
Yeah, I'm going to use that. So what we say at Children's Aid is there's Go Foods and there's Slow Foods, which is not to be confused with Slow Food USA. So Go Foods make your body go. They give you the energy to make you go. And so it's all those things you named in your healthy snacks. Slow Foods slow you down. You know, they're fatty, sugary foods that don't do anything for your body and slow you down. And so we have Slow Food Sam, who enacts this whole thing about, you know, eating a bag of chips and feeling really slow in the morning, or not just a bag of chips, but like marshmallow fluff and a whole lot of other things.
Inappropriate
as well.
Breakfast.
Yeah, very inappropriate breakfast, and which is another show. And then there comes a point in the story where you ask the kids, like, what should Slow Food Sam do to feel better? You know, and they're like, eat an apple, you know, so he, like, pulls out an apple and he's eating this apple and he's feeling better and he's running. Anyway, so the point is that it's really about this holistic approach to food in their toddler years, right? They are learning about their bodies, learning about Go Foods and Slow Foods. They're learning sugar just a little bit. We did this little hand thing, just a little bit. You don't say no to anything, right? Because it creates that backlash you're talking about. But generally speaking, you say yes to all the good stuff. And then, you know, that's this really sort of, like, overall basic approach. We do some cooking activities with them. We make some applesauce, pita pizzas, things like that with veggies on top. And then we move on to elementary and middle school years and things get more serious. They get more serious and we approach food from a lot of different... We kind of take one cooking and nutrition education and gardening class and pack it full of a lot of things. It's an opportunity to learn about vocabulary. It's an opportunity to learn about math skills and science skills and all of those things, but all through the lens of food and empowerment. So kids are getting into the kitchen, and when I say kitchen, I use the term loosely. Often, you know, it's just a classroom with a science sink in it or something like that. But we bring in the burners and we bring in the, depending on the, you know, the age of the kids, we're using plastic knives, or, you know, in middle school, we're using real knives. And the whole goal is to get kids to be, I would say, the term we use is adventurous eaters, because what I've often seen, and this is fine, this is actually, you know, kids are born with a kind of fear of new foods. totally fine, no problem. It's up to adults to show them what's good and what's bad. If they have poor modeling, they're going to, you know, latch onto that poor modeling, and then they're going to eat a lot of bad foods throughout their lives, right? I mean, those foods are not technically going to kill you right away, but they're not going to be good for you, you know, and they certainly are causing a whole host of health problems. And so the adults in our classrooms are modeling that, you know, celery and mushrooms and spinach and kale and sweet potatoes and all these different veggies and fruits are wonderful and exciting and good for you, and they smell it, they taste it, they touch it, they break into groups and teams and they work together and they make this meal at the end, which makes them so proud, you know? And then, I mean, I always use this one example of a black bean dip, because you picture like a black bean dip. It's brown, it's mushy, like there's not much to sort of recommend it if you're just looking at it, you know? So I remember sort of like giving kids a black bean dip and then being like, gross, I am so not eating that. But we sat down together, middle school class, and in Harlem, I remember we made a black bean dip, you know, we put like black beans, we put cilantro, we sauteed some onions, you know, we had some cumin, like I think we sauteed it with some tomato and stuff. It was delicious. Then we kind of whizzed it up in the blender, left it a little bit chunky, and ate it with some baked pita chips that we made, right? And they were like, this is mad good. Like, it doesn't look good, looks nasty, but you know, but it's mad good. And it is, it's mad good. Like, it's delicious. So there's all kinds of things like this that they'd be completely open to if they do it themselves.
Absolutely. And I know that with the older kids, sometimes you're going even more in depth with concepts.
Yes.
Food justice being a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you're teaching them about how they're advertised to, and all of these really important things that if you teach them to open their eyes to, they won't be susceptible or as susceptible in theory.
Right. Everybody's susceptible to advertising, but you have to realize you're susceptible to advertising in order to combat it.
Well, what's the most susceptible to advertising is the schools. I mean, they themselves, in accepting these
Snapple iced tea. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which...
deal with the devil kind of thing, that, in my personal opinion. So the thing with when we get, you know, in older ages, so the second level of our class is kind of this conscious consumerism, right? So you have to be conscious, aware of what you are looking at. How do you read a label to see what is in your food, you know? How do you make a choice about, so we have this kind of like front of the box, back of the box advertising and label reading lesson. And so you look at the front of this box of, let's say, Fruit Loops, right? And what is it trying to tell you? It's got all these different colors and they pick up on all sorts of stuff. They've got like, you know, the cartoon characters and they've got, you know, things on the top that say 12 essential vitamins and, you know, whatever, right? And so the kids are like, look at all this stuff that they are trying to convince us to, trying to convince us to buy this product. Great. Okay. Let's see how true this is. And they turn over the box and they say, you see red dye, you know, number whatever, and blue dye number whatever. I don't memorize the numbers. But, you know, they see that, and I'm like, guys, is there any fruit in this? And they're like, there isn't any fruit in this. That's interesting. And they learn something about that. But it's not just about this one product. It's about everything. You know, we take fast food, you know, McDonald's, like chicken sandwiches, right? And we just say, like, okay, if you were to make a chicken sandwich, what's in your chicken sandwich? What would you put in it? And they're like, chicken, bread, you know, maybe if they're, you know, feeling really excited about vegetables, tomatoes and lettuce, you know. And they see that it's like 4, 5, 6 maybe tops ingredients, put a little mustard on there. And then they look at the list of 75 ingredients in the, you know, chicken sandwich, and they're like, oh, I see. Okay, so this is not exactly real food. So that's what they're learning. I would also say, like, food justice, you picked up on that. Food justice is a really important concept in the communities in which we're working, which is mostly Harlem and Washington Heights in the South Bronx. And so, you know, kids are looking at their neighborhood critically, right? Like, that's what they're good at, looking at everything critically when they're middle schoolers, right? So you got to kind of pull on that, okay?
Just like, go with it.
Criticism is the main sort of topic. All right, how can we shift that in a slightly more positive direction? And so they're looking at the food justice for us is the intersection of food and social justice. So questions of, you know, why when I'm in East Harlem, 20 blocks down on the Upper East Side, can I get any kind of vegetable I want at like relatively decent prices? But I come up here and Slim Pickens and it's expensive and it's, you know, not that good and kind of rotten. So why is that the case? And really exploring that question, it's very, very, it's a difficult question to confront. It confronts all the questions of racial, social, economic disparities, health disparities that kids are living with in these communities. You know, that said, we don't stay in this place of negativity because that's a terrible place to be and a completely disempowering place to be. Instead, we say, great, you've learned all this. What do you want to do with it? Right? What do you want to do?
Which is what I'm going to get to after our break, because yeah. I know that they have turned some of those thoughts and some of that anger into extremely creative projects yes. with the help of the Children's Aid Society. So we're going to take a quick break on Feeding the Future. I'm your host, Oriane Casentino. I'm here with Stefania Patinella, and we will be right back. Please stay tuned.
More from TaxStar on the heritageradionetwork.org. Keep it locked for more Feeding the Future.
Thanks for tuning in to Feeding the Future. I'm your host, Oriane Casentino. You're listening to us on the Heritage Radio Network. And I'm here with Stefania Patinella, the Director of Food and Nutrition Programs for the Children's Aid Society, a 150-year-old New York City charity focused on helping children and families in underserved communities to succeed and thrive. We were just talking a little bit about the journey that the kids take within the program from before birth. Mm-hmm. Up until and including their college years. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in the middle there, they are educated on sort of like the facts of food life and how it's a little bit grim in some of the underserved communities, some mm-hmm. of their choices, how they're targeted with marketing yeah. tactics, and maybe a little bit left out of the big and healthy picture.
Yeah.
So this is why organizations like the Children's Aid Society and so many others are going in there to help educate and create a better long-term lifestyle for these kids. Yep. So, and their families.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they definitely take these messages home to their families. It's a really, really big thing.
Well, it's really an intense message. It's so, I mean, they are so probably filled with passion when they learn.
They are filled with
passion. They are a target.
Yeah, yeah. We do these focus groups, you know, to find out how effective we are and what's going on. And so they'll bring home, like, they'll tell us stories about what they bring home. And I remember this one girl being like, you know, oh, my God, my cousin brought home a candy bar. And I was like, yo, that's filled with sugar. And so then we start, like, looking. Then she grabs the bag of sugar. And they measure the amount of sugar in the candy bar, and they both look at it, and they're like, this is not worth it.
Wow.
According to her, she threw it in the garbage. I don't know if I believe that right. part of the story.
But we split it four ways.
Yeah, exactly. Either way, I'm happy.
Yeah, but I mean, even just making the awareness. The,
absolutely.
You know, knowing these things can serve them now or later, and I don't think it will go away.
No, I don't think so.
So, I have a question about the way it spreads throughout the kids, because I know hopefully, ideally, they go home, they tell their families, yeah. they tell their parents, they're teaching their cousins. So it's a good example for this question. Is the peer pressure sort of a little bit more positive at all? Are you seeing yeah. like more of that on the schoolyard as opposed to me who had
eat this kale, right?
Like I had a terrible like brown bread sandwich and everybody was like, I'm not trading you my lunch.
That's a good question.
So
we make it so like our goal is to make it so cool that it's the, you know, that it's even like better than the norm. So we have this Iron Chef competition. Iron Go Chefs competition every year, and it's the culmination of our program. So the elementary kids and the middle school kids get together, and they sort of compete in their age group. And we have like 7 or 8 different programs come from all across the city, and there's about, you know, 7 to 10 kids in each of those teams, and these kids have been like, you know, like working for this throughout the year. And so you can imagine, I mean, they come in with these incredibly creative dishes. I mean, they're using like, you know, they're using things that are really, really familiar for them in their cultures, but they're using things also that are very unfamiliar to them. So we have like amazing takes on rice and beans. You know, we have amazing takes on burgers, like black bean burgers, and with like platanos and, you know, and avocado. And then we have something totally different, which is like, you know, tabbouleh, or, you know, quinoa with asparagus and salmon. And it was quinoa and crusted salmon was the final winning dish, which I was like, what? Wow. Like, how do you even do like, I went to culinary school and I'm not like encrusting my salmon with quinoa. Anyway, so the point is, like, they get so into it, and they have their outfits, and they're super serious, and we get these great, you know, important judges to be there and to make them feel great about their effort. And so they're going, and they're not only making these dishes, but they're going around the room, and they're tasting everybody else's dish. Their eyes are, like, wide open. Their palates are totally, like, open to this. And it's like, one of the coolest things they're doing all year. So, yeah, I mean, that creates a kind of, like, very positive peer pressure.
And a little bit, when they're a little bit older, I think, are you guys funding some projects for them? Like giving them a little...
Yes. Okay, so our food justice projects, we actually give them like mini grants. We're like, okay, great. So where we left off before the break was like, you guys are like in your community, you're realizing these things that like you're not so happy with, what are you going to do? And here's like, we'll give a $500 mini grant for you to do whatever you want. And so the three groups that did it this year, one picked... a healthy eating cookbook that they made, and they took all these recipes from teachers and folks in their community that, and they came and cooked with them inside the classroom, and they were like diabetes kind of prevention, you know, recipes, but I mean, obviously they were just like delicious tacos. And then another group picked a mural. So they decided it's like, it's on a, let's see, at our East Harlem Center, it's on 101st and between Lex and Park. You can see this mural soon.
Fabulous.
And so it's going to be up on, you know, up on our building. And basically it's like these, as they describe it, and they came up with this whole idea, the fresh and good food is growing out of the bad food. It's like taking over and breaking it, they call it. So it's just great mural that they're painting. And then the third group did a ridiculously ambitious project, a healthy eating wrap, and it was like amazing. And you have it.
We have it.
Nice.
Cooking in the kitchen.
It's
a great wrap.
Actually, I always call it cooking in the kitchen. It's veggies in the kitchen.
Veggies in the kitchen. Sorry, I'm going to... Right. That is the refrain.
Yeah.
So it was... How many kids were there on that wrap?
I think it was somewhere between... About 12, maybe?
Wow.
Yeah. And they each had different roles. You know, executive producer, you know, rapper.
Like, fashion
design.
Consultant.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It was great.
So we're going to break you off a little piece of that.
Yeah. I should say we worked with a really talented rapper. His name is Piso. Mm-hmm. And he basically came in and he was like, all right, guys, give me your veggie, eat it, your like veggie lyrics, and like let's knock them down. And he just helped them rhyme. It was great.
Did he lay down the tracks in the background, the music?
Yeah, I mean, they went to the Hit Factory and they did it in the
Hit Factory.
Like, and one kid on the way back from the Hit Factory stuck his head out the window and screamed the entire time, I'm a famous rapper.
All right, let's hear what they had to say.
Ever wonder why your produce so rotten? I get my own food straight from the farmer's market. It's T-Bone, you know what sounds nice? Eating good vegetarian with brown rice. I got a chef's apron that I wear too. You see in these tomatoes? These are heirlooms. I got legumes, make a bean spread. You mess up my wheat bread, you gon' see bread. Peppers, celery, some onions too. I let it simmer long, make a lovely stew. What you gonna do when I'm with my crew? Our drizzle in the kitchen, eating healthy food.
I'm cooking, veggies in the kitchen. 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 When it comes to good food, you know
I love it.
Oh my God, I can't get that song out of my head.
But they did such an incredible job.
They did an incredible job.
I mean, it's
they
really were very, so super thoughtful.
Very proud of
you
themselves.
You can't write rap lyrics unless you feel something about it.
No, it's true. They were feeling those heirloom tomatoes. You should see the video. That's they're like biting part. Into an heirloom tomato, you know.
Is the video is up on the website?
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
so it's childrensaidsociety.org, and then it's /nutrition. You can go to the food justice page from there.
Okay, well, that's unfortunately where we have to send people because we are out of time for today.
So soon.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're
it was
welcome.
So much fun talking to you.
I would love to have you back again because I feel like there's so much more great stuff that you can enlighten
us
with.
Yeah, we have to talk about institutional food and feeding kids better.
We do.
We have to talk about that.
Okay, so we're going to have Stefania Patinella Part 2, I hope, in the near future. I'd like to thank you, listeners, for being with us at Heritage Radio Network. I'm Oriane Costantino, your host. This is Feeding the Future. You can find this and many other shows at heritageradionetwork.org. Also download plenty of podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher.com. So thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.